Dan?
Yes.
Easily, I approach.
The microphone.
Because I ain't no joke.
Tell your mama to get off of my tip because...
You don't have time?
I have no time to give her my dick. So I'm going to hold it.
And walk across the stage?
Yes. But if you fuck up...
Let me guess. You're going to get your gauge.
That's right. I'm going to unload the barrel and laugh because...
Yes.
Because I am putting lead in your motherfucking ass.
Mine?
Yes.
Yes.
Your motherfucking ass.
Excellent.
Psychopathic.
Mm-hmm.
Because the hoes are attractive. But...
Yes.
When I am on hard...
Yes.
My...
Is it a yard?
Is at least a yard.
At least. Bare minimum.
Bare minimum.
I wish I... That's where my... I can't remember any lyrics. I'm surprised I could even get that far in it. So, when we were young, very young, on the mean streets of South County.
Yeah,
in St. Louis,
the main streets of Melville.
Yeah, which is like the whitest, safest, blue-collar, boring-ass suburb in St. Louis. Rap really wasn't a thing, you know, that we were aware of, that wasn't penetrating our consciousness. But we had a friend named Bobby, and he had a brother, and apparently his brother had a tape of N.W.A.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't mean like an album that he bought, because you couldn't buy it in St. Louis. It didn't exist.
He had a mixtape?
Like a label, and it was N.W.N.W.A. written on it. And he also had
Easy Does It. Yeah.
Yep.
And so I was talking to somebody about that the other day, about my recollection of music. And like, because, you know, everybody, I think, has some amount of music that shapes who they are. Like, everyone has that one band that you listen to at that one point in your life that, and I think a lot of people have that band that kind of defined them. For me, it was Guns N' Roses.
Mm-hmm.
When I was going through some really bad points in my life, you know, my parents had a fairly large yard, somewhere between half and full acre. I mean, it's a pretty big yard. And it was on a hill, and we had
they had a cherry tree.
We did. We actually had we had cherry trees, we had apple trees, we had pear trees, peach trees. And I used to go down behind these, up from all the fruit trees, were these two gigantic box elder trees. Mm-hmm. And I would just lie on the hill behind these box elders. It was like this nice kind of slope where you could look up and see all the stars and such. And I had my little Walkman or whatever. And I would play one of the three main Guns N' Roses albums that, you know, were around then, which was Appetite for Destruction, Use Your Illusions 1 and 2. And then I ended up getting Lies and such later, but I would listen to those three. And so I still to this day associate Guns N' Roses with those really difficult points in my life, right? And there's other bands that I associate with different points in my life where I remember getting through a period of my life because there was this one song or this one band or this one album that I listened to a lot. But really the one that kind of got me through the roughest parts of childhood and adolescence was Guns N' Roses. But I have a very, very positive memory of gangster rap.
Absolutely.
And which is why to this day...
Because when we heard it, you know, country music was kind of big, and then the sort of rock, like Van Halen type rock,
yeah,
was really big.
The classic and rock type, arena rock.
Man,
type.
It was introduced to us when we were in junior high, so a lot of it was sort of, you know, stuff. But the artistry of it kind of filtered in as we grew up and we're still listening to it. But no one told us, well, you shouldn't be listening to this music. Because that came later.
Well, and also part of it.
So there was a point where it became rebellion.
No. Because it was never rebellion for us because we were introduced to it before other people. Oh, God. Sound hipster here, but just by the nature of how we happened to get it from our friend's older brother.
Well, sure.
We were listening to it and we enjoyed it and we didn't
seek it out because someone told you it was bad.
Well, and also keep in mind that like the Guns N' Roses I was listening to, Walkman. No one had any idea what I was listening to. And with the gangster rap, which once was mostly NWA's Straight Outta Compton, and then Easy Does It, we would listen to those. I would go over to Chad's house. We would walk down to like the grocery store to Blockbuster, rent a two-player Nintendo game, you know, like...
Rent a Nintendo at times.
Yeah, at times. And then we would go back to Chad's house, and we would put those rap tapes in, and we were typically the only two there. Because, you know, his parents had a lot of obligations and work stuff and whatever. Mm-hmm. So, once again, nobody heard it. And so, to me, that's what I free associate gangster rap with, which is why, to this day, I mean, I did end up picking up some rap that came along later, like, you know, Biggie Smalls and Tupac and, you know, whatever. And then I some things that I hadn't been exposed to back then, like Ghetto Boys, South Central Cartel, et cetera, et cetera.
Got to hook you into some Black Star.
Well, see, but here's the thing. To this day, and I don't know if it's musical taste I would have had simply because of nature, or if it's because since we grew up with that old school gangster rap, if it's the nurture of that. But I still, I mean, I can appreciate other forms of rap, but to this day, the gangster rap from kind of the mid to late 80s through about the mid 90s, that's still, that's my thing, right? That's where my heart's at. And which is why if anyone looks at my forum sigs, they're almost always rap lyrics.
Right.
And when I'm on Facebook, I'm posting rap videos. A lot of times when people ask something and I give kind of a strange sounding response, I'm quoting a rap song. It's also why I'm looking forward. I know it's out now, and I'm looking forward to eventually picking up a copy of the Luke Cage soundtrack.
Yes. Oh, yeah.
Because, yeah, that had some great... And some of it was newer, you know, like the Jadena's Long Live the Chief. Yeah, I mean, that's past year or two or three.
The album that goes on is not even out yet. He just has a bunch of singles.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah, I knew it was recent. I didn't know it was that recent. Mm-hmm. But, you know, and then, of course, some of it was like old school but new, like, because they have Method Man in there.
And he does a freestyle.
He does a freestyle. Yeah. So it's brand new, but of course Method Man was...
Do you think your Wu-Tang sword can defeat me?
Yeah, he was a member of the Wu-Tang Clan. So if anyone doesn't know who Method Man was, if you've heard of the Wu-Tang Clan, he was one of the rappers in that group. And he does a freestyle called Bulletproof Love, which it's so neat to hear because it's this total collision of worlds, right? Because you got to put yourself back in the late 80s to early 90s, superheroes, comic books, these are not mainstream. You know, they are super nerdy. People probably know who Superman is, but you don't admit to liking him. You go to something like Iron Man, they don't even know who you're talking about. And so it was so far out of the mainstream culture. And then you listen to the song Bulletproof Love, where Method Man is doing a freestyle rap that's set in, it is from the first person perspective as if Method Man lived in the Marvel Cinematic Universe. And he's rapping about the realities of, you know, what you'd expect from a gangster rapper, the rough life on the streets. But he's talking about Heroes for Hire and Iron Man and Luke Cage. And
what use is Iron Man to him? Yeah, he's knocking alien heads around and stuff, but they've got problems in Harlem.
Yeah, they got being ignored. Street level problems in Harlem. And but he talks about that in the song, right? He raps about that. And it's just kind of, I tell you, coming from a background where these two worlds could not have been farther apart. It was so, I don't even know what the word is here. It was so vindicating. I don't know what word I'm looking for.
Have you ever listened to Deltron 3030?
Yes. I've listened to actually Deltron in a few of his iterations. Deltron the Funky Homo
Sapien. Del the Funky
Homo Sapien. Yeah. I've listened to him in a few of his iterations. There was a Deltron song that I liked. I can't remember the name of it off the top of my head. It used to get cycled a lot back when it was Launchcast before Yahoo bought it and then became Launch. And now I don't know what it's called. But it used to be Launchcast, which was an independent group, which I still think had the best music service I've ever had. But it's long, long gone. But there was a song on there that specifically was from the Deltron 3030 iteration of Del.
So what Deltron 3030 is, it's a guy named Del the Funky Homo Sapien. And then he has these DJs, Kid Koala and Dan the Automator. doing the musical backing for it. And it is a themed hip hop. And the theme is, it's the year 3030. And they have time travel and aliens and space colonies. And like he does a rap battle song where it is a rap battle, like gladiatorial combat. And he's using like music weapons to fight aliens with six arms and stuff.
And it's crazy, too, because it was he did it as if, you know, like Chad said, the science fiction reality was the reality.
And now that's right up my alley, because one of my favorite things about Gwar is the Gwar mythology.
Right. Yeah. Right. And it was kind of cool.
As you sit here in your Gwar t-shirt. Yeah.
Because, I mean, now there's a more modern style of rap, which is nerdcore, where they...
Like MC Chris, et cetera.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm not really into nerdcore, because it's not that it's bad. I mean, it's fine. It's totally fine.
It's fun.
It's very fun, but it is really trying too hard to me.
I have to agree with you. Insofar as I was listening, I got what I felt was a pretty good sample of them, because there was this thing where
I do like chap hop though.
They were
that sounds like an adult film.
they were talking about Alex Trebek, because Alex Trebek, he had someone on Jeopardy, and she said one of her, because you know he talks to all the contestants, and she said that one of her interests was nerdcore rap, and he had never heard of this. And she's like, what is nerdcore? And she's like, well, it's people rap about this and this and this. And Trebek's like, so basically losers. And
wow.
Yeah. And so what happened was like all these people that are in nerdcore.
So the internet showed up.
Yeah. So basically every rapper on the internet
hacker named 4chan
showed up. And they did a big group response song to that. And I will have to say that in terms of their actual ability to rhyme, just their ability,
their flow,
the ability to be a lyricist, right? They were
good. Is that a stat in the rap role playing game?
Yes,
flow is a very important stat for my character.
Absolutely.
Well, and Biggie Smalls talked about it, because in his freestyle,
what is it?
He said his flow, his slow flow, and I think they were using phase rip, because he specifically described his slow flow as remarkable. He didn't say it was like a 17-18. He specifically said it was remarkable. So I assume that he was on like a phase rip thing. But the point being, though, that while their technical abilities as rappers were great, the beat, the track that was laid down behind it was, of course... It was like a sampling. It was the 8-bit sampling of like Pac-Man dying or something like that. And they had the whole 8-bit, you know. And it was like, come on. You know, I give it.
Like, that's the thing. So when you have hip-hop, you have the MC is up front. He's the one who's doing the rap. It's not rap, it's hip-hop. And in hip-hop, you have an MC and a DJ. Typically.
Generally.
So you have the MC is up front, and he is doing what is essentially street poetry. He is doing poetry that is about X, Y, and Z, and it is delivered in a flow that, you know, kind of rolls off. And instead of like singing where you're kind of keeping with beats, it's like a river that just kind of flows off of you. The DJ, on the other hand, this gets to the point of why the nerdcore thing, I don't really like it. And what you're saying here is that the DJ takes music, usually records, is how it, you know, kind of came about. And they are playing the backbeat, which is the beat that kind of keeps it going. But they're also doing what is called the breaks. And it's like, these are the breaks. And a break is you have a song, and the song is like 4 minutes long. But there's 30 seconds that's really awesome. Maybe it's like a chorus, or maybe it's like some power chords in a rock band, or maybe it's like this really clever sort of set of horns from a R&B thing, or maybe it's like this sort of jazz drum that's going really good. And as a DJ, you're listening to that, like, man, I love that song, but man, that is awesome, but it's only in there for a few seconds. Well, what if I break that out? What if I break that out and then I turn that into the music? I put it on loops. I mess with the sound a bit. I extend it out. I do things with it. I put other beats in there. And then I make this backing that is this sort of elaborate quilt of that.
Yeah.
And what nerdcore is doing, what Dan's talking about, is that it is taking those breaks from Pac-Man music or Mega Man music or things like that. So when people listen to it, it hits a nostalgia button that is really good. But for people like me, and what I assume Dan's talking about, it is tinny, 8-bit, MIDI
music. It's too on the nose. It's like, I agree with what Chad said. I think they're trying too hard to fit the nerd stereotype. I wouldn't even say archetype. I'm going to say stereotype here. And, you know,
they're selling hard.
Yeah, they're selling the nerd thing so hard where it's like, you know, if you guys would just take that out, and it's their art, they can do whatever the hell they
sure,
want.
Absolutely.
But if, in my opinion,
if
they would take that out and just use much more standard song samples and drum beats and things like that, to me, it would feel a whole lot more natural. And I'm sure some of them do. I am not an expert on nerdcore rap. I've just heard enough of it to have a surface level opinion, I guess, is what I would say. I couldn't sit down with somebody and go round for round on, well, this artist.
And you know what? I'm sure that there's nerdcore out there that is phenomenal that I'm just not exposed to.
Yeah,
and I would not have any problem being exposed to it.
And once I can't play it here because I don't have any way right now mixing the sound from the computer into
or getting clearances,
or getting the copyright to do this. But when we're done with this, I'll play for you guys.
And we'll link this in the show notes.
Yeah, we'll link it in the show notes. Both what Trebek said and then also the nerdcore rap response, which is a great high-level sampling of literally something like 2 or 3 dozen artists. Hmm. Because it's like all of them came together to basically, you know, spit back at them and be like, what's your problem? You know, you're being an idiot.
So what exactly is this right now? Because we didn't introduce anything. We just kind of hit record so Dan could rap and,
I think this is going to be a highly censored bonus episode, to be honest, because this was not even vaguely the topic we had in mind. But I think that's what this is going to be, is a highly censored bonus episode.
Okay, well,
because the amount of obscenities.
Let me ask you this, Dan.
Sure.
What are your top 3 pieces of hip hop? These can be albums, artists, or songs, but just 3.
I'm going to give you my top 3 artists: Biggie Smalls, Ghetto Boys, and who am I going to pick? There's a bunch of them that would tie for third here. So
this isn't like number one. With a bullet, is Biggie Smalls.
It is probably going to be Biggie Smalls.
Because he was shot.
he was shot multiple times. And the Ghetto Boys, which to the best of my knowledge, all 3 of them are still alive.
And unlike my wife, he did not make it.
No, he did not make it. But his slow flow was remarkable.
But that's endurance the only was remarkable. Stats.
Yeah. Endurance was his dump stats. So they just... I'll let you know, Bards. That's what happens when you're doing dump stat. Memory can't sing, but she can take 6 bullets.
She can. She's tough.
If I
wouldn't mess with her.
If I was to pick a third one, you know, it would be so hard because there's so many. NWA was good. Eazy was good. But I'm going to go for a little bit more esoteric of a pick here and say MC8, including the groups he was involved in. Because I think he was also in Compton's Most Wanted and a couple other groups like that. Yeah. But I mean, that's a tight third. That's a tight pack of third. Mm-hmm. I mean, I could give you so many artists that I really enjoy that I wish I could put in the top 3. But I had to get a third, it would be either MC8 or actually another kind of outside pick would be Too Short.
Mine would have to be... Okay, so I'm really into history. I love history.
Sure.
I will have to pick African Bambaataa as my number one because he is, you can't even say he's the godfather of rap. He, without African Bambaataa taking all the pieces and putting it all together, you would not have rap. You would not have hip hop. And there are some really good African Bambaataa, like, hip-hop out
there.
Sure,
it'd be like...
so old school.
There's questions to whether we would have rock and roll if it had not been for Fats Domino.
Right.
And it's much the same thing.
So. Yeah. This guy, African Bambaataa, right? He had a gang in New York called the Zulu Nation.
Mm-hmm.
And he they did street parties, and he was huge into music, right? So he pulled together these street parties, and he had the biggest speakers on the block. I mean, rattling windows and stuff. They'd take over basketball courts, and he had this record collection. Like, they say, I mean, thousands and thousands of vinyl records. He was just, that music was his jam, and he'd play them. Well, you also, at the same time, you had, like, street poets and such, and you had, like, a lot of urban street poets and, like,
and sort of slam poets.
Slam poets, diss poetry, and that sort of thing. And he would do these parties. Well, you need an, he felt you needed an MC. You need somebody that's like, okay, let's get the dance going, and, you know, up there and really going with it. Well, he started getting these MCs to get the crowds going, and then he would play the music. He had these turntables, and then he would start doing, instead of just putting a record on and letting it play, he would start playing with it. He would start playing with the sounds, and he would start like going back and forth between turntables, and he would kind of stop, and he'd just do sort of the early DJing stuff. And pulling this all together, African Bambaataa and the Zulu Nation, he took his gang, and he's like, yeah, all this crime crap is a bunch of bullshit. We're going to be all about dance and clubs and music, and he converted his entire gang into a musical powerhouse.
Huh.
And it is really amazing. And he has this album called African Bambaataa and the Search of the Perfect Beat. And it is, it, the guy is just a genius. I would love to walk up to him and say, hi, I'm a white boy from St. Louis who grew up in a really, really safe sort of area. And I want you to know how much hip hop means to me.
You know, if you want to see something that I think kind of illustrates how those worlds came together, but it does it in an after the fact sort of way. It doesn't show you in history, but you can see those influences. You can see the influence of the street party. Mm-hmm. You can see the influence of the MC, both being someone that excited the crowd, but also being someone that threw in some lyrics and poetry. You can see the involvement of the music. You can see all those elements come together. I'll link this in the show notes as well. There's a video that there was a song by DJ Kool called Let Me Clear My Throat.
Mm-hmm.
And he has a version of it where he brought in, I think it was Dougie Fresh and Biz Markie. And he brought in a couple other hip-hop artists. And they have an old-style, this video is like an old-style street slam. But it's done, you know, after the fact of hip hop music existing, but you can still see all of those influences there under one roof and in one video, you know, interacting with each other and how they all sort of come together. But I mean, Chad, in terms of our musical taste, that is something that I think definitely is distinct between us. Is both of us got our start with late 80s, early 90s gangster
rap.
Hardcore. And pretty
drugs
much,
and killing and sex gangster rap.
And what happened was once I got a hold of Launch and Pandora and all this stuff, was I just started getting introduced to all of these other acts and albums and whatever that I had simply never heard of.
Right.
Whereas you kind of migrated off of gangster rap into stuff that is, I mean,
consciousness rap.
Well, let me call it for what it is. It's higher brow. I mean, to be honest, it's higher brow than what I listen to. I mean, stuff like
Blackalicious. My number two,
Which is, and I mean, he's an incredible rapper.
Yeah.
If you listen to like his, was his Alphabet Aerobics?
Yep.
Where he's basically trying to see just, it's about fast rap, right? Yeah. It's about trying to rhyme and speak very quickly and very precisely.
Every line, he goes, and that's how fast he's rapping. Every line, the first word starts with a letter of the alphabet.
Right.
And he goes A, B, C, D, and he goes in order. He does another one called Chemical Calisthenics, where he does the same thing, only with elements on the periodic table. And but he's not nerd rap. It's not nerd hardcore thing. Right. I mean, it's just like
you said. That's the thing, though. That's kind of what bugs me, is I don't hate nerdcore, right?
Right, okay. Right.
I've explained.
You hate white rappers. I got it.
No, many nerdcore rappers aren't white. I mean, don't get me wrong, there are white nerdcore rappers.
But boy, are there.
many nerdcore rappers are not white. In fact, some of the ones in this video I'll show you guys when we're off the recording, obviously you'll see they aren't white. Mm. But like I said, it's just I don't like the way that they, I think they try to be,
sure,
they try too hard. But what kind of gets to me is the fact that you have people like Del the Funky Homo Sapien, mm-hmm. and he takes on his Deltron 3030 right. persona, and you have these people like Blackalicious, mm-hmm. and you have these people that do this highbrow, sciency, geeky sort of rap that was not nearly as on the nose with
it. It's not heavy-handed.
It's not as heavy-handed as what nerdcore rap is. Mm-hmm. And that's, I think, if I was to pick one of the two, where I would tend to go, just because, I don't know, it's just taste, right? I have nothing against any of these nerdcore rappers or what they're doing, but it's just personal taste. I would much rather hear them cover these topics and do their thing
instead of Pac-Man
and Mega Man and Donkey Kong and, you know, whatever.
Let me shallow up the pool here for a minute.
Okay.
I never really got into rap music.
The guy with the Gwore t-shirt.
Yeah, never really got into rap music.
By the way, however, I love Gwore as well. I've seen him twice in concert.
When I was my first few years of college, I used to listen, you know, ironically, religiously to Cypress Hill's Black Sunday.
Yeah.
I used to be able to quote that album front to back.
Yeah.
But there is a musician by the name of Tim Fite, F-I-T-E, who does a rap album called Over the Counter Culture, which I listen to a lot. I love Tim Fite, especially his first few albums. But then Third Bass. I used to love Third Bass.
Oh, I thought you may just got to Third Bass and
No, I love a little stink figure. But Third Bass, the Pop Goes the Weasel. I was like, it's my jam when I was a kid. So in debate camp, I had a t-shirt there. It was an old Santa Cruz skateboard t-shirt, and it was a facsimile of Third Bass decapitating in a guillotine a facsimile of Mr. Vanilla Ice. So there you go. There's my rap history for you.
Yeah, that's good. My number three would be most definitely.
Oh my gosh. I was trying to remember. It's like you and I are on the same one. That one. I love Third Bass's Pop Go the Weasel. I had to check who wrote it, because it's been a while since I've heard it, because for some reason Pandora doesn't have it on circulation. But I listen to it all the time on Launchcast. And yeah, it was. I was trying to remember, was it the same band? It was. Yes, Third Bass, Pop Goes the Weasel. I was a huge fan of that. I still am a huge fan of that song, too.
So I'd have to hear it. I'm sure I've heard it
before. Pop Goes the Weasel. The Weasel
Goes Pop. You need the song.
Yeah. It's fun.
Yeah, I'm sure it was. Well, as I was saying, my number three is Mos Def and Talib Kweli as Black Star. And it was a seminal album in the 90s that at the time was totally ignored, because in the 90s, rap, it was money and glitz.
Bitches and hoes.
Yeah. Bitches and big screen TVs and all bling and all this sort of stuff. And what a lot of people who don't like rap associate with rap, it's just this sort of money, no, shallow sort of.
Because Two Live Crew.
Well, yeah, but so.
I have in my car as we speak, As Nasty as They Want to Be.
So Black Star, Mos Def and Talib Kweli, which probably mispronouncing his name, they came together as sort of a super band called Black Star, and they did a really, really good album. And it was like consciousness rap before consciousness rap. They were talking about some very real stuff, and it was very slick and good, and in a style totally different than what was going on in the 90s. You know, all about the Benjamins and all that sort of stuff. That was kind of like the sort of very plastic, hyper-produced, completely unreal sound with completely unreal topics, and it was just not a good time, in my opinion, for hip-hop. That's why I like Dr. Octagon, too. Dr. Octagon is Cool Keith. Now, Cool Keith does a lot of theme albums.
That sounds like a superhero villain, like an MMA guy who juiced once too much.
So Dr. Octagon is a character in a theme album, and it is Dr. Octagonicologist. And he is a gynecologist who is a
in the octagon,
half man, half shark, half ape, I think. Or no, he's half man, half shark, half ape, I think. But, you know, he's three halves, you know, together. It is what would you call it? Porn core. Like, you know how I was saying, you know, you take the breaks out of stuff. You can take it out of jazz. You can take it out of video games. You can take it out of all kinds of stuff. He took his breaks for his Dr. Octagon album off of porn music. And it is very, the humor in it is very puerile. It's very silly. It's incredibly absurdist. And it was a rebellion against the incredibly hyper-produced, very plastic, very glitzy, glamoury, and very clean-sounding. And I mean, when I say clean-sounding, I mean like the musically clean, very, you know,
crisp, sharp, right.
Yeah, sort of sounding hip-hop that was going on at the time.
That's something else that's fairly common in rap, but not as common in other styles of music. And Gwar is a great example of an exception.
Gwar is a great example of a lot
of genius in being genius musicians and genius comedians.
Have you ever seen the Gwar TED Talk?
No.
You should link that in the show notes.
But with Gwar, you know, they have the characters, they have the mythology. It's this
entire backstory.
Yeah, they have this whole backstory. And that's something else that is a lot more common in rap than it is in, say, rock, which is that the rap artists will take on character personas based on the part of themselves they're trying to express. Probably the one that most people are familiar with would be Eminem, where...
Yeah, his Slim Shady.
His Slim Shady character. When he's trying to really be honest and talk about himself, he raps as Eminem, Marshall Mathers. When he's trying to be more absurd and he's talking about this really cartoonish violence and these ridiculous, you know, dark humor sort of things, he does that from the Slim Shady persona. Mm-hmm. And I've never seen one of his shows, but I've been told that on those shows, he actually does have at least minor outfit changes and such, where like he'll put on a hockey mask and or whatever when he's doing the Slim Shady character, who represents a different side of himself. And while that wasn't terribly common in gangster rap, that is common within hip-hop in general, is to have these sort of personae that they lapse into based on... Because, in fact, it's very narrative. I mean, once again, we have to understand that it's history, even if it's gotten somewhat fuzzed and lost.
Yeah.
Its history is in street corner poetry, slam poetry, things like that, that had personae and that had, you know, angle and had intention to it and such. And so it's something that I think, I guess, when people are picking, especially the styles of rap that Chad's more into, it's something you have to be prepared for, is even the same rapper from album to album may not be doing not just the same style, but he'll be tackling different topics, might not even be quote unquote the same person.
Cool Keith is a perfect example of this. He has an album, I don't remember what it's called, but basically it's a Godzilla album, and it's really about a lot of the breaks and the sound effects and the backing come from Godzilla movies, but it follows a story of the Creature from Planet X type thing. It's actually one specific movie, and the album, if you buy the record, has punch outs where you can punch out these cards and like do these little standees of tanks and stuff, and then a standee of the monster, and then like a standee of him at a DJ setup. It's not that great, but it's still a fun album. It was one of those where like I listened to Dr. Octagon and I liked it, and I'm like, oh well, I gotta check out more cool Keith stuff. And he's not accessible. His music, he's not trying to impress you. He's trying to say things thematically, and if you don't get it, that's your problem, sort of thing. But the real irony of it is a lot of it is very puerile and very lowbrow in its highbrowness. It's very, he's a very odd dude, very interesting. But you want to talk about themes and stuff? There's an artist named Janelle Monáe, who I absolutely love her stuff. She's actually going to be in a movie about mathematicians at NASA during the moon launch, and about how the mathematicians were black women, and about the racism and stuff, and how they overcame. And it looks like a really good movie. But she did three albums that were all tied together, where she played a character named Cindy Mayweather, that was in the far future, and Cindy Mayweather is a robot who attained consciousness, and she broke the one law that robots cannot break. She fell in love with a human. And they have like these robot hunter squads that are hunting. There's this album, there's this song about like, there's these rules. It's like, okay, you can't use firearms when you're hunting her down. You have to use chainsaws and electro blades. Happy hunting. And then it kind of goes into the thing, but it's all about like the future and about how robots are bought and sold. And then and about how like she's running away and how she's in love with this guy. And then the next album is about like this robot underground and about this sort of rebellion that happens. It's like three different ones. And all of it is based upon the themes of Fritz Lang's Metropolis. And it uses that sort of 30s art deco stylings and stuff. Is really neat. And the videos are there. There's music videos for it, too, that have, like, robots and stuff in them. It's awesome.
So I found out something, a little bit of rap trivia I did not know. And this may be one of the last man to the party kind of things. But the song by Outkast, Ms. Jackson.
Yes, is a true story.
Yeah, it's a true story. It's directed to Erykah Badu.
No, it's
It's Erykah Badu's mother.
Right. Yeah.
The woman by which he has the kid, it's a true story, is Erykah Badu. She's an artist in her own right.
Quite a good one, too.
Yeah, she's a good one. Now, I will have to say that in the stuff she did with The Roots, when they brought back Jill Scott, who was the one that wrote her parts, I actually like Jill Scott's performances better, but that's just personal taste. But I was looking at an interview with Erykah Badu about that stuff, and apparently her mom loved it. Like, they were asking, like, how did she take to that song, being the Ms. Jackson?
Who is the villain of the song?
Well, not exactly a villain. It's more apologetic. I mean, I don't know. It's complicated.
I'll give you that.
It's complicated.
It's very complicated.
It's complicated.
Yeah.
But she was saying that her mom just totally owned it and, like, had like a Ms. Jackson bumper sticker and like a Ms. Jackson vanity plate and like had like a mug and a pen and apparently would sign autographs to Ms. Jackson.
That's fantastic.
Awesome.
But she apparently totally loved it. I had no idea. I didn't know. I figured the song, as honest as it was, had to have some basis in reality, but I didn't realize precisely what that basis was, nor had I ever heard Erykah Badu's mom's commentary on it.
Yeah.
But she apparently thought it was great. Do with that what you will. But, all right, why don't we sign this one out here? And because we actually did have some role-playing topics to talk about today. So we're going to take a quick break, and I'm going to play that song for these guys, the response to Alex Trebek. Then we will come back. And actually, I don't know, we may release these in reverse orders. Maybe the regular episode comes out first. But either way, you guys have a great week and great games and all that jazz. And we will flow with you next time.
That's right.